What's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Islamic State extremists are claiming responsibility for Tuesday's truck attack in Berlin that killed at least 12 people and wounded dozens more at a crowded Christmas market in the German capital. The terror group made the claim after German police released a lone suspect captured Monday evening after a huge truck smashed into an open market where locals and tourists were partaking in traditional Christmas festivities. The chief federal prosecutor's office says it released the suspect, a Pakistani national, because investigators did not have enough evidence to charge him with the crime. Russian and Turkish foreign ministers say the evacuation of the besieged city of Aleppo, Syria, should be completed in no more than 2 days. Turkey's top diplomat says more than 37,000 people have been evacuated, and the goal is to have all remaining people in Aleppo removed by Wednesday. Meantime, Israel is extending a welcome to those impacted by the civil war in Syria.
We're prepared to take in wounded women and children, and also men if they're non-combatants. We'd like to do that. Bring them to Israel, take care of them in our hospitals as we've done with thousands of Syrian civilians.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The Russian and Turkish presidents say the assassination of Russia's ambassador to Turkey will not harm ties between the two countries. Russian President Vladimir Putin is demanding to know who instructed the off-duty policeman to kill Ambassador Andrei Kalov at an exhibit in Ankara on Monday. Kalov was shot in an apparent protest against Russia's involvement in Syria. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. An explosion at a huge fireworks market near Mexico City killed at least 29 people Tuesday and injured dozens more. The market was packed with shoppers buying fireworks for traditional Christmas and New Year's parties. Emergency crews needed to wait several hours until the explosions died down so they could approach the site to look for victims. The blast also damaged several nearby buildings and vehicles. So far, no word on a cause. UN human rights officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo say at least 20 people have been killed since Monday in violence between protesters and security forces. Protesters object to President Joseph Kabila's remaining in office after the end of his term. William Clowes has more.
Sporadic running battles continued through Tuesday, and local media have reported that an office building belonging to Kabila's political party and a police headquarters were set on fire. José María Arenas, the director of the UN Joint Human Rights Office in the DRC, told Reuters that his team is reviewing reports that 20 civilians have been killed in confrontations with security forces. Arenas told VOA that military police had denied his staff access to the University of Kinshasa, where clashes have taken place, and threatened them. VOA visited opposition areas and saw evidence of the street battles. William Clowes, Kinshasa.
President Barack Obama Tuesday permanently banned new oil and gas drilling in large sections of the Arctic and Atlantic oceans. The president's order, made in conjunction with a similar action taken by Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, affects 46.5 million hectares of the Arctic off Alaska and 1.5 million hectares off the Atlantic from New England to the Chesapeake Bay. The White House says Mr. Obama used a 1953 law that many previous presidents used to protect lands for what is said is public purpose, including safeguarding the seas and people from a potential catastrophe, such as an oil spill. President-elect Donald Trump has not yet publicly reacted to Mr. Obama's action. Japan's Supreme Court has ruled in favor of the government's plan to relocate the U.S. Marine base in Okinawa, dealing a blow to opponents who want the base off the island. The Japanese and U.S. governments want the base in the middle of a crowded city moved to a sparsely populated area for safety reasons. But many Okinawans want it located, or relocated, that is, off the island altogether because of noise, crime, and accidents linked to the U.S. base. The court made the decision without any hearings. For details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website. That's voanews.com. I'm Michael Brown reporting here in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, December 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Opposition leaders in the DRC have told their supporters not to cooperate with President Joseph Kabila, who continues to cling onto power.
In Matete, an opposition area, Peter Kabongo tells VOA that security forces spent the night shooting tear gas and live rounds, as well as arresting people.
That's VOA's William Klaus in Kinshasa. Authorities in the Central African Republic plan to close an airport IDP camp. Sudan and South Sudan extend their oil cooperation agreement, and tensions are rising in Kenya ahead of that country's 2017 presidential poll.
If at all we do not have laws that are favorable, laws that will ensure free and fair election, then there'll be no election. The opposition will actually not participate in that particular election because there's no reason why we should go to the guillotine.
That's a Kenyan opposition member of parliament. We'll tell you why Kenya's National Teachers Union wants British International Academy schools to shut down. And a new treatment for early stage prostate cancer gives hope. The stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. UN human rights officials in the Democratic Republic of Congo say at least 20 people have been killed since Monday in sporadic clashes between protesters and security forces. President Joseph Kabila's second elected mandate expired at midnight Monday, but he remains in office. As William Klaus reports from Kinshasa, the country's top opposition leader has called for a campaign of peaceful resistance.
As midnight approached on Monday, much of Kinshasa was filled with whistling and the banging of pots and pans to mark the end of President Joseph Kabila's second and, according to the constitution, final term in office. The celebrations gave way to clashes between small groups of demonstrators and security forces while gunfire was heard in opposition neighbourhoods. Sporadic running battles continued through Tuesday, and local media have reported that an office building belonging to Kabila's political party and a police headquarters were set on fire. José María Arenas, the director of the UN Joint Human Rights Office in the DRC, told Reuters that his team is reviewing reports that 20 civilians have been killed in confrontations with security forces. Arenas told VOA that military police had denied his staff access to the University of Kinshasa, where clashes have taken place, and threatened them. VOA visited opposition areas and saw evidence of the street battles. In Matete, an opposition area, Peter Kabongo tells VOA that security forces spent the night shooting tear gas and live rounds, as well as arresting people. According to Kabongo, their purpose was to intimidate the population. Soldiers and police have been patrolling Kinshasa and other cities since last week, and political demonstrations have been banned since September. Kabila's chief diplomatic advisor, Barnaby Kikaya bin Karubi, said the measures are justified.
Le déploiement des forces de l'ordre dans la ville de Kinshasa.
Karubi said on Monday that the level of tension throughout the DRC justifies the massive deployment of security forces. He blamed the media for presenting December 19th, the last day of Kabila's term, as an apocalyptic date. The Constitutional Court ruled earlier this year that Kabila can stay in office until the Electoral Commission is able to organise elections. He named a new unity government late Monday night under terms of a deal signed last month that provisionally schedules polls for April 2018. But the preeminent leader of the Congolese opposition for more than 35 years, Etienne Tshisekedi, addressed the nation in a video statement shared online.
Je lance un appel solennel. D'abord au peuple congolais.
He says, I launch a solemn appeal to the Congolese people to not recognize the illegal and illegitimate authority of Joseph Kabila and to peacefully resist this coup d'etat. He accused Kabila of high treason. Tshisekedi says the opposition platform that he heads, Le Rassemblement, will resume negotiations with the president's political alliance on Wednesday, following a four-day suspension. The opposition is calling for polls during 2017 and for Kabila to commit to not running in the next presidential election. William Klaus for VOA News, Kinshasa.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has reiterated the urgency of an arms embargo against South Sudan. A spokesman for South Sudan President Salva Kiir told VOA yesterday that an arms embargo would significantly reduce the country's ability to be a sovereign nation. But Secretary General Ban says an arms embargo would strengthen, not undermine, the political process in South Sudan. He also said it would diminish the capacity of both the rebels and the government to wage war.
We have repeatedly seen the deliberate targeting of civilian communities perceived to support an opposing side. As efforts to revive the political process continue, the least we can do is to stop the flow of more weapons, which pose a direct threat to the safety and security of civilians and humanitarian workers.
That's UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. Meanwhile, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Powell, told the 15-member UN Security Council this week that if the Council fails to impose an arms embargo, South Sudan could be on a trajectory towards mass atrocities.
We need to bring this resolution at last to a vote, which we will do by the end of this year. Members of the Council will need to raise their hands and make a decision. A decision on where they stand on the issues of life and death that have been raised by the Secretary General, that have been raised by everyone who goes to South Sudan and comes back, and above all, that the people of South Sudan have at stake.
That's U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Powell. Sudan and South Sudan on Tuesday extended their oil cooperation agreement for another 3 years. The deal also covers security and financial arrangements between the two nations. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum.
South Sudan Minister of Petroleum and Mining Isaac Lol Gatkwar says he wrapped up talks with his Sudanese counterparts today on the 2012 deal covering trade, movement and security for the next 3 years.
And in the 3 years, we will also restructure the transitional financial arrangement, restructure it how we can pay back our sisterly country.
The transitional financial arrangement, or TFA, was reached between the two countries when South Sudan seceded from Sudan, taking with it 75% of the oil revenues that Sudan previously enjoyed when the two countries were one. South Sudan was to pay Sudan about $3.3 billion from Juba oil revenues over 3.5 years. Gatkwar says the agreement needed to be renegotiated because oil production and prices have fallen dramatically over the past couple of years.
We are having difficulties internally and also globally because the oil price fell. So that's why we came to our brothers and sisters in Sudan to rearrange this TFA. And that is what we have agreed. If the price of the barrel is 20 to 30, we will pay these percentages. If it is this and this, we will pay this.
Gatkwar says Sudan and South Sudan agreed to work together to provide more support to revive the oil industry in South Sudan so that the two countries can fulfill the terms of the cooperation agreement.
We also had signed an MOU between the Republic of Sudan and the Republic of South Sudan in how we can cooperate in all areas, starting with us getting power from Michlich so that we can start the production in Unity Oil Field. Also us using the base camp in Michlich so that our oil workers can work there. Also the training and the capacity building in all areas.
Speaking in Arabic, Sudan's Minister of Petroleum, Mohammed Zayed Awad, says his ministry will cooperate fully with his South Sudanese counterpart.
There will be good cooperation between Sudan and South Sudan in providing logistical and technical support after we make sure that security arrangements are in place to protect the oil fields and the workers from both sides.
Awad says Sudan will also help South Sudan rehabilitate oil sites that have been affected by the 3 years of fighting in South Sudan in a bid to increase oil production. The two parties also agreed that refined oil products treated in Sudanese refineries, such as gasoline, will be provided to South Sudan at a discounted price. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Today's Wednesday, December 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Let's send shout-outs to listeners on our affiliate station, Radio Lake Victoria in Kisumu, Kenya. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Tensions are heating up in Kenya around next year's presidential poll. A special sitting of parliament to debate changes to the electoral law ended with a fist fight on the House floor. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
Honourable members, I think you have now done enough with each other.
With fewer than 8 months until the general election, Kenyan politicians are wrangling over how the Electoral Commission should carry out the process. In September, members of parliament from both sides of the political divide passed electoral reforms, following weeks of protests demanding the electoral commissioner step down. The commission was accused of favouring the ruling Jubilee coalition administration. On Tuesday, a special session of parliament met to debate proposed amendments to the reforms. The opposition says the amendments were proposed by and favour the ruling Jubilee coalition. Opposition legislators began the session by blocking the speaker from accessing the House chamber for more than 2 hours. Justice and Legal Affairs Committee Chairman Samuel Chepkonga said the amendments were requested by the Electoral Commission itself.
I am tabling this report of IBC.
Speaker Justin Muturi asked Chepkonga to produce documents to prove the request was made by the Electoral Commission and that his panel had agreed to present the amendments.
So that then nobody says that your proposed amendments are personal and not that of those of the committee. Yes.
One opposition member of parliament threatened a boycott of the election.
If at all we do not have laws that are favourable, laws that will ensure a free and fair election, then there will be no election. The opposition will actually not participate in that particular election because there's no reason why we should go to the guillotine.
The debate ended in chaos after lawmakers began fist fights on the floor. The House has now adjourned until January 24th. Meanwhile, in a media statement, ambassadors from 10 countries denied working with organisations, political parties or candidates to influence the election result. The statement was in response to the Kenyan government's order Monday for the International Foundation for Election Systems to stop its voter education program in the country. The envoys said their assistance supports Kenyan citizens to exercise their right to vote and have their voices heard. U.S. Ambassador Robert Godek said the organization, which is supported by USAID, has expertise and experience in supporting free, fair, credible, and peaceful elections around the world. He said the United States is disappointed by the effort to discredit the program. Kenya is to hold its sixth general election in August 2017. Mohammed Yusuf reporting from Nairobi for VOA News.
Still in Kenya, a national teachers union and advocacy groups are calling for low-cost private schools operated by British international academies to be shut down over irregularities. The schools maintain that they offer affordable, high-quality education to low-income families. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nakuru.
14-year-old Marceline Mokera visits her former school, a Bridge International Academy located near her home in an informal settlement outside Nairobi. She finished top of her class in the state-administered final primary school exams. She and her father hope her grades will land her in a top national secondary school next year. Nyakundi, a casual laborer, has been paying tuition fees averaging $40 a term.
My daughter, she has done well, and I think she will go far to get a better school where she will be able to manage and even to assist me, even the young assistant brothers.
Bridge runs around 400 private academies across Kenya. Liberia recently announced it will turn over management of its public school system to Bridge International, but the schools have come under pressure both in Uganda and Kenya. The Kenya National Union of Teachers has called for the school's closure over alleged non-compliance with Kenya's nationally approved curriculum. The co-founder of the academies, Shannon May, says the bridge schools are on track to meet a January deadline for the government to have at least 30% of the teachers trained on the state curriculum.
There is no negative competition between a community school and a public school, that actually they help improve each other. And that as an organization at Bridge, what we're trying to do is just to ensure that every child has access to a great school, whether they choose to be in a community school or in a public school.
Abraham Ochieng from the East African Center for Human Rights says the schools take advantage of the poor. His organization is calling for them to be shut down.
Is it affordable, really? And versus the public schools, which are essentially free, are they able and they offer better quality education than this bridge? Their motivation, are they out to enhance the education or is it for profit? So until that is very clear, then it will not be able to say that it's actually serving the poor or the people in the informal settlements.
More than 100,000 students from marginalized communities are currently enrolled in the academies across Kenya. Advocates of the schools say literacy levels in the slum areas they serve are rising. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nakuru, Kenya.
Nearly 30,000 residents of the Central African Republic are still living outside the city's airport. The displaced persons camp sprang up in 2013 as people sought protection from rebel groups and intercommunal violence. Now, 3 years later, the country's president has urged the remaining residents to, in his words, go home for Christmas. But as Zach Badoff reports from Bangui, that may be easier said than done.
At its peak, the Impoko Airport camp housed over 100,000 people seeking the protection of international troops as fighting between rival militia engulfed their neighborhoods in the capital. Much of the city is peaceful now, but the camp remains.
Leocadia Giando takes us to her old neighborhood, just a 20-minute walk away. Militia destroyed her home during the fighting. She shows us where her brother lives. She wants to leave the airport camp too, but can't afford the rent. Her husband got sick while living in the camp and died.
I don't have any financial help. I want to leave the camp because we're living there like animals. We sleep on the ground. We don't have any beds. There are many illnesses there. We need to leave to live a comfortable life.
She is not alone. The country is still recovering from the conflict, and many of the people left at the camp are those who have yet to find jobs. And the crisis has inflated prices.
Before, rent was about $10. Now the same house is $13. A house that costs $13 per month is now $25. So we need to struggle to have a new life. It's not going to be easy.
The government says the camp must be closed because of health issues and security concerns, given the camp's proximity to the airport. Some refugees may be relocated to transit camps.
We are starting this program with the little money that we have, but we have the word of the international community that once the refugees are relocated, once they go back to their neighborhoods, they are going to have support.
The government stresses that it will respect the dignity and international human rights of the displaced people. The process may take time.
I don't think that both the humanitarian and the government joining forces will have the capacity to drive out of the site all the people at once. No, it's something that will go at some pace until the site is emptied. For me, it has been too long, to be honest with you.
The government has not yet set a deadline for when the camp must be cleared, but has encouraged the camp's residents to go home in the coming week. Zach Badorf for VOA News, Bangui.
Men with early-stage prostate cancer may no longer have to wait to see if their disease has progressed. Researchers are using light therapy to destroy cancer cells with a drug made from a bacterium that lives at the bottom of the sea. VOA's Jessica Berman reports.
The standard of care for most early prostate cancers is to take a watch-and-wait approach, foregoing treatment unless the disease gets worse. But now, men with early-stage prostate cancer may soon have another option. researchers in Britain have spearheaded trials of a form of light therapy using a laser beam that targets cancer cells, destroying them at the earliest stage. The treatment is called vascular targeted photodynamic therapy. Mark Eberton, professor of interventional oncology at University College London, is lead author of the study published in The Lancet Oncology. He says the treatment involved giving patients an infused drug that sensitizes human tissue to light, and doctors then illuminate the prostate where the cancer was located. Eberton says the light activates the creation of oxygen molecules called free radicals that cut off the blood supply to the cancer, killing the harmful cells.
This is the effect of light on the photosensitizer, and that releases these noxious compounds, which are damaging to the cancer cell, but particularly to the blood supply to the cancer cells.
The treatment relies on photosynthesis, which is how plants make energy from sunlight. Some bacteria use a similar process. The drug the patients were given is made from the bacterium WST11 found in the bottom of the ocean. There's very little light in the murky waters, so the microbe has evolved to efficiently convert light to energy. The chance of cancer progressing to a more serious stage was 3 times lower in the light therapy group compared to patients who were actively observed. Eberton believes researchers have developed a new class of therapy for prostate cancer that's well tolerated, can be repeated if necessary, and is localized.
The fact that we're going off to the tumor and trying to preserve as much of the prostate as we can, whereas all existing therapies are directed at the whole prostate.
Eberton likens it to the difference between removing a cancerous lump and doing a mastectomy to treat breast cancer. Current therapies against prostate cancer, including radiation and removal of the gland, can lead to lifelong problems with erectile dysfunction and incontinence. Eberton says the side effects with light therapy were resolved within 3 months. In the VTP study, investigators found nearly 50% of patients went into complete remission, compared to 13.5% of a surveillance group. The work was carried out at 47 treatment sites involving 413 men around Europe. Regulators will now consider whether to approve vascular targeted photodynamic therapy as a new treatment for early prostate cancer. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. UN officials report as many as 20 people are feared dead in Kinshasa after violence broke out during demonstrations calling for longtime President Joseph Kabila to step down after his term in office expired on Monday. 3 deaths have been confirmed by VOA Afrique. Residents in some parts of Congo's capital blew whistles at midnight to signal that it was time for Kabila to leave. Gunfire that was heard in several districts continued throughout Tuesday. Monday, protests took place in several neighborhoods in Kinshasa, despite a ban on demonstrations and a large military presence. Witnesses say police fired tear gas to disperse the protesters. Much of the capital was deserted, with shops closed and people staying home fearing violence. Authorities in Somalia's Puntland region say an unidentified gunman has shot dead a senior regional official who managed the Puntland presidential palace for the last 12 years. Adan Gaz Haruse was shot in Bosaso, Puntland's main port and the economic hub. That is it for this Wednesday, December 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Butte saying have a lovely day.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA. Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA News Feeds. VOANews.com.